Shalom, Havarim. Hello, friends. Often I start with a made-up, fabricated joke. This week, I'm going to start with a real story, but it has nothing to do with today's sermon. So, I tell it because last week I shared a joke and it involved a football team letting me down regularly. AD came up to me and told me a real story, and it seemed appropriate to share about being let down again today, as my alma mater did lose yesterday. And thank you for not rubbing it in. Can't exactly say Virginia Tech won yesterday either, but that's... So the real story is that there was a man who lived in upstate New York, and he was a huge Buffalo Bills fan. He had season tickets, so he rarely missed a game, probably never missed a game, got older, as everybody does, and he eventually passed away. So in his actual obituary in the local newspaper, he wrote that he wanted to have 6 members of the Buffalo Bills to serve as pallbearers at his funeral. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that a nice request? The reason he wanted to have 6 Buffalo Bills players as pallbearers, and this he listed in the obituary, was, and I quote, "so they can let me down one last time." You can find that there. It's a story that was written up. This is an actual obituary, and I, for one, am just jealous that I didn't think of it first. That was so good. Oh, my word. My friends, today we are going to conclude our sermon series on what I have called my essentials to Anabaptism. And I'll tell you why I'm maybe concluding it shortly. We have looked at these topics so far. We've looked at Christianity as discipleship. We've looked at church, world, state distinctions. We've talked about service. We've talked about stewardship. Last week, we talked about nonviolence. And then today, we're going to have the little 5 part B. We're going to be looking at the "but what about" questions. So I want to start with just kind of a question for you all. A question that it's not a trick question. I just want to ask you, is the Bible a nonviolent book? No. Not a trick question. No way. The Bible is not a nonviolent book. Early on, you find stories of God's people, the Israelites, going to war with other nations. And not only that, you have God commanding the Israelites to go into war. And there's a word that is used in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew language. It's the harem warfare. And harem warfare is often translated as total annihilation or wiping them out. God commands the Israelites to contribute to harem warfare against the Canaanites to totally wipe them out. That means not only men, not only soldiers, but women and children, and even the animals. Total warfare. Wipe them out. Now, we also know that there are passages in the Bible that tell us that God does not change. We find passages like Malachi chapter 3, verse 6a. It says, "I, the Lord, do not change." Is that clear? Absolutely. Like, this is God speaking. I don't change. Okay, that makes sense. And we as Christians, we believe that Jesus is the fullest manifestation of who God was. Jesus is God in human flesh, God incarnate. And Jesus says this, Hebrews 13:8 says this, "Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever." So does God change? No. Does Jesus change? No. But the Old Testament clearly calls for warfare. Is the Bible nonviolent? No. But Jesus is. So how do we reconcile these things, these teachings of Jesus? Last week I gave you some kind of heady things, these 3 different approaches to arguments for Christocentric nonviolence. Remember that word? Christocentric nonviolence. Nonviolence centered in the teachings and life of Jesus. So how do we reconcile these things? A God who commands total annihilation, wiping out entire people groups. We call that genocide. How do we reconcile that with a Jesus who says, "love even your enemies"? Well, that's going to be one of the things I want to address this morning. Here's what we're going to look about on But what about Sunday? That's going to be a bit of a tongue twister, isn't it? But what about these things? First question, we're going to talk about the Old Testament, but what about all of this violence that we find? The second one is always fun. We're going to say, well, what about Hitler? Or, I didn't mean it, wasn't intended as a joke. Well, what about Hitler? Anytime you say Hitler in a church, people laugh. That's just, you just know, no. What about Hitler or the other challenging situations? We'll talk about that shortly. But what about blank New Testament teachings? There are a number of New Testament teachings, even words from Jesus himself, that can be interpreted as violent acts. Marlene read one of those passages for us this morning. And the final thing I want to look at is, but what about our duty to one another, loving our neighbor? All right, are we excited for this one? Excellent. I'm a little scared, so pray for me if you don't mind as I go through this. Sometimes I know this can be kind of, it can make me tense. And let's be honest, I'm not just trying to convince you of what I believe today. Anytime that we talk about these difficult things, when I get a little bit nervous myself, I realize that not all of my arguments are rock solid. I realize that if it was rock solid, we wouldn't be having these conversations 2,000 years after Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. But my reason for doing this, and you might ask as I go through, really, you're giving me fodder for the other side? You're giving, to use an appropriate metaphor, you're giving ammo to the other side? My reason for doing this isn't to try to hide the other's perspectives. I want to bring these two together to talk about them and say, what are we really called to as Christians? So hopefully I will help you see how I think through some of these issues. And if you come out on the same side as me, you know, the more the merrier. If not, I hope that you can at least respect the process. Like those two pictures, like the picture of Wolverine or Batman, I hope you can at least respect the other person's perspective. Which one do you see? Well, I'll give you some credibility there, but this is what I see as well. All right? Thank you. We can go forward. Let's talk about the Old Testament. All right, we've established one thing so far this morning. Does God change? No. Does Jesus change? No. But I have no reason to think that that doesn't mean that what God expects of God's people doesn't change. I'll give you some examples. How many of you made an animal sacrifice this morning? And I'm not talking about that pound of bacon that you polished off for breakfast. You don't need to point fingers. I haven't made any animal sacrifices for, 38 years? My entire life, I have not made an animal sacrifice. Have you made animal sacrifices? Maybe it's not time for confession, Gary. But
we did.
Okay, well, slaughtering is something a little bit different. You didn't bring them into the church and sacrifice them on the altar or anything like that. You did not burn doves, or you did not have whatever offerings they make. You didn't kill an animal for sacrificial purposes. I hope if you did, we'll talk after church.
No, we didn't.
You did it for eating. That's different. Well, speaking of eating, how many of you are kosher eaters? Did anybody, some of you said you had that pound of bacon for breakfast. Guess what? That's not kosher. Do you like seafood?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How many people cooked a goat in its mother's milk? Well, okay, maybe that one doesn't apply. But the point is, most Christians don't eat kosher food. You don't eat according to the Levitical teachings on food, do you? Some do. I enjoy baby back ribs. Don't sing the song, no! It's in your head. You will not listen to another thing I have to say because you got the song going over and over and over in your head. Capital offenses. These are found in our Old Testament, which we believe to be inspired by God. If somebody is caught in adultery, both people are to be put to death. If you break the Sabbath, you're to be put to death. I don't know why I included this one. It doesn't really apply in most cases. But if you marry your mother-in-law, guess what happens? The community will look at you strange, and then they will put you to death. And I included this one for any listening children. And I have the reference there if you have any questions. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 21 says, if you disobey your parents, children are to be taken to the city gate and stoned to death. I got the stink eye for taking away the iPad earlier. Did you guys do any of this today? Did you do any of this week? Any of this lifetime? I hope not. Why? I'm going to ask one question. Give me one word response. Why did you not do those things? Because of? Thank you, Sylvia. Yeah, because of Jesus. Of course we didn't do these things. Jesus tells otherwise. He doesn't necessarily lay it out as clear as some other things, but because of Jesus, we don't have animal sacrifices. We don't eat kosher food. These capital offenses, Jesus showed us that if somebody's caught in adultery, well, let the one who is without sin throw the first stone. So these are clear Old Testament teachings that we do not keep today. So why would it be such a huge leap to think that the teachings about violence no longer apply after Jesus as well? Now, for many times, I've talked about what I call a progressive ethic in the Bible. There's places that God just kind of meets people where they are and then calls them towards His perfection, His perfect vision for humanity. One of those cases is the case of polygamy. In some chapters in the Bible, it seems like God's even endorsing polygamy. But then when you get to the New Testament, He's calling the leaders of the church be married to just one spouse. So He meets people where they are and pulls them towards His perfect vision for humanity. I think that's the case with violence as well. For instance, in the Old Testament, we find something called the lex talionis. It means the law of retaliation. Equal retaliation. Eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life. So if you come out and you pluck out my eye, I have a good counselor to suggest you go see. But if you come pluck out my eye, according to the New Testament law, I can come and pluck out yours. Eye for an eye, nothing more, but equal retaliation. And then we know very well that Jesus comes along in His Sermon on the Mount. And He says, "You have heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also." So those things I showed you first, you know, these right back here, these I think we've all agreed we're not going to keep these Old Testament laws. But never once did Jesus come out and say, no longer do you have to make animal sacrifices. No longer do you have to eat kosher. There's some hints towards that direction. But He does say something very clear. He says the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that no longer applies. This is one of the six antitheses found in Matthew chapter 5. All right, we better move on to our next argument. You guys, I'm glad we have lunch here today. You can stick around for a while. Excellent. The second argument that I want to make today or address today is the question about Hitler or other challenging situations. Try to keep the laughter down. Right? Hitler or other situations. And I want to start with kind of the other situations. Whenever people hear that I am a nonviolent person, that I don't believe in violence, automatically, like without any question about it, they always go to like the worst situation possible. And they say, "Are you telling me that if somebody broke into your house and tried to rape your wife or kill your children, you would sit by and do nothing?" I'm like, "I didn't say that at all. Were you listening to me?" My challenge here is that we tend to think in binaries. That it's either kill or be killed. And I guess the only thing you can think of is that you either have to shoot this person or you let him do whatever he wants to do. I'm like, come on, people, get a little creative. The first thing I thought of is, you know, why about people sleep with a gun in their nightstand? Why not sleep with an air horn in your nightstand? For somebody that was living in the city like me, if I had an air horn there, somebody breaks into my house, I just start, if I had brought one, that would have been awesome. You know, they're really loud. You use them for soccer substitutions outside. You know, you just beat that a few times. The neighbors are going to wake up. What's going on? The person who's breaking into the house is going to probably need a change of pants, and they're going to leave really quickly. You're scaring them. What's that? Hopefully they leave, yeah. But the other thing is, we sleep with our phones beside our bed. We have iPhones, Sonia and I both do. And I'm going to be careful how I do this because it might make your phone call right now. If you say, with the most recent update on the iPhone, if you say, "Hey Siri," and then you say the word "call," and then you say the numbers 911, you don't even have to touch the phone. So I intentionally didn't say that all in a row so your phones don't make that call right now. The police show up at Stanton Mennonite. That's all I would have to do. If somebody broke in, I'd say, "Hey Siri," and then the word "call," and then the number 911. She would automatically dial it. Now, there's other things we can do as well. Like, I could stand up to the guy and say something to him. I could try to physically intimidate him, even though I'm not going to hurt him. He doesn't know that. Or what if rather than having a gun, you have a non-lethal weapon? What if you have a baseball bat? You know what? That, I think, is a step in the right direction. So it's not about doing nothing, but it's about doing something that's not lethal to this person. And as I think about it, you know, I've shot guns before. My older brother has a number of handguns. He likes to do target practice. I've shot a few guns. It's probably been a couple years since I've last shot them. But I'm not good. these really big hand cannons that he has. He likes the big ones. I'm just really a bad shot. So if somebody breaks into my house and they have a gun, and I pull out a gun, all at once they see that as a threat. All at once, it does enter into that kill or be killed kind of mentality. They enter into, I guess it's the fight or flight kind of mentality. They're either going to fight me or they're going to get out of there. And if they decide they want to engage me in hand-to-hand combat or gun-to-gun combat, there's a really good chance that I'm going to lose against a skilled professional thief or whatever they may be. So there's no guarantee that violence would even make the matter better. So what about Hitler? Let's go back to the 1940s. And Hitler was, of course, which country? Germany. So if you think about Germany in the 1940s, the church was kind of at its high point. If you think about 1940s Germany, the place where Martin Luther was writing all his theses, what denomination do you think of in Germany where Martin Luther was writing his theses? Lutheran, okay. So almost everybody in the country of Germany would identify as either Lutheran or Catholic. Now, you may remember several weeks ago I talked about separation of church and state. And I said that when the government tries to call you to do things that disagree with your understanding of who Jesus is, we are called to disobey the government. But what do these Lutherans and Catholics, what do these Christians do? They fought on the side of Hitler. It was Christians who rounded up the Jews. It was Christians who put them in concentration camps. It was Christians who murdered 6 million Jews. So you ask the question of me, what about Hitler? I say, well, what if people actually, Christians actually decided to defy Hitler and not do the things that he was telling them to do? And I know that doesn't really answer the question, but it makes you think at it from a different perspective. We are not called to just simply blindly go along with what the leaders are doing. There are times when we as Christians are called to step back. And yes, that may be costly, but think about it from that perspective. Wouldn't you rather be punished for not following Hitler's teachings than to actually contribute to one of the greatest genocides of modern history? Now, I said I'm going to give a little bit of fodder for the other side, give some ammo to the other people. And I just want to admit that this is one of the toughest things for me, the what about Hitler question. And as many theologians and ethicists have said, people will often say, yes, it seems like Jesus is saying you cannot defend yourself. Jesus seemed to be nonviolent. He wouldn't respond with violence to try to defend himself. But many people have said, well, just because Jesus says to turn the other cheek doesn't mean that you're supposed to offer your neighbor's cheek. And you know what? I get that. I really do. I understand that. And I think that's one of the challenges that we are stuck with, one of these things that we have to live within, this tension. But it's my prayer that we will at least be the kind of people that don't rush into the violence, don't rush into the binary of kill or be killed, asking instead the questions, well, what if we did this instead? What if we didn't fight for Hitler? What if we didn't use a lethal weapon against a person breaking into our house? All right, well, let's lighten it up a bit and go on to point number 3. The blank New Testament teachings. All right, so the one that Marlene read for us is one of my favorites. It's the story about Jesus cleansing the temple. And we know this story. Jesus is going into the city of Jerusalem to celebrate one of these holidays that everybody had to travel in for. What was this holiday? Do you remember? It was Passover. Yes, they're going for Passover. And they were required to make sacrifices. We don't have to do that today, but they did. And I've traveled distances before, and I've traveled distances with animals. I've traveled distances with kids. And sometimes it's just easier to get new ones when you get there. No. That doesn't apply to the children. Traveling across the county is hard enough with kids. Traveling across countries would be very difficult with animals. So it was very common whenever you're traveling from outside of the city of Jerusalem to the city to make sacrifices, you just buy the sacrifices when you get there. Of course, those people that are selling the sacrifices, they hear the cha-ching sound, right? This is a chance to make money, and they jack up the prices like people selling items at a Harry Potter festival in Stanton, Virginia. Socks don't apply. That's for a good cause. But you know very well you can buy that same shirt for less money on Amazon the next week. Anyways, if you don't know what I'm talking about, bless you. They jack up the prices. They're making a lot of money. Jesus comes into the temple. He sees this. He's like, $20 for a dove? What is this about? Jesus gets angry at what people are doing. We call it capitalism. Jesus called it robbery. And he says this in John 2:15. So Jesus made a whip out of cords, and he drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins, the money changers, and overturned their tables. This is proof. Jesus used a weapon, and he drove people out of the temple using that weapon. He was beating them left and right, making sure they got out of there in a timely fashion. Well, wait. Now, wait a second. Who did Jesus drive out of the temple? The sheep and the cattle. Now, even my nonviolent animal-loving friends, not that I don't love animals, but my friends who are especially interested in animal welfare, have pointed out that just because Jesus has a whip doesn't mean that he hit the animals with it. Because if you ever watch a cowboy, or if you've ever played around Indiana Jones style, you get a bull whip. You don't use the whip to actually hit the animal. One of the things you do is you crack the whip, and it makes a really loud snap, and it startles the animals. Has anybody here ever moved cattle? Yeah, it's no, you don't know what you're missing. Cows, they're big, they're slow, they are lazy. They need a little bit of motivation. So a loud snap gets them up and going. I don't know if Jesus hit the animals with the whip or not. And I'll be honest that this passage can be interpreted in a different way. It can be interpreted as him driving out the money changers with the whip as well. But if we think about Jesus, does Jesus change? No. What seems more consistent with our understanding of this guy who said, love your enemy? That he would hit people with a whip or snap it to make the animals move out? Just saying. We don't have nearly enough time to address all these. I'm just going to read some of them for you today. These are some passages that have been used to argue for violence, that Jesus was violent, or at least he didn't argue against violence. For instance, Peter, John the Baptist, Jesus himself, they all addressed members of the Roman army, yet none of them told these people to leave the armed forces. Another one is that Jesus says in Matthew 10:34, do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Luke 22:36, and then again 38, Jesus says, if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. The disciples said, see, Lord, here are two swords. That's enough, he replied. I said that in a way to kind of lead you how you might interpret that. And then there's the violence in the book of Revelation, where blood runs as high as the bridle of a horse. Now, each one of these passages can be addressed just like I did with that story about Jesus driving out the money changers and the animals with the whips. There are other ways to see this. It's, again, like those pictures. There's two different ways to look at them. If you look at it one way, you may not be able to see it the other way until somebody points it out to you. I don't have time to address all of these this morning, but I'm just going to say now, this is the possibility to continue this sermon. If at least two people come to me after the sermon and say, I'd like to hear you address those, in 2 weeks I will preach on those and we can talk about it. Next week isn't the best week, but in 2 weeks I can do that. Again, I'm setting the parameters. Two people need to come to me and say, I want to hear this. If it's just one person, maybe we'll sit down and have a cup of coffee. But if multiple people want to go further and deeper into this, I will do so. But I'm just going to say that all of these, if you search for those passages, search that with nonviolence on Google, you will find other interpretations other than that this is a violent approach to following Jesus. But I want to close with this one. Our duty to one another. So often when people hear about Mennonites or other churches being nonviolent, they say, but you have a duty to serve your country. You have a duty to make the people around you have a better life, have better opportunity, a better situation than what they have. And you know what? I say you're right. That's absolutely true. And people will sometimes say that you Mennonites, you nonviolent people, you're just lazy. You're trying to shirk your responsibilities. And I say, if we're not doing anything, you're right. We are called to do something, but we're not called to act violently. We're called to do something to make those people's around us lives better. And we can start with grammar. We're called to make the people's lives around us better. And I'm just drawn to the speech from Ron Sider. He gave this speech in 1984 at Mennonite World Conference. Ron Sider wrote a number of books, including Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. If you're interested in food kind of ethics, it's a great book to read. Ron Sider was addressing this large body of Mennonite believers from around the world. And he starts by praising people in the military. And he's saying, I don't agree with you 100%, but people in the military, I give you respect. You are going out in the world's toughest situations and facing the worst situations that are even known to man. And he says this. He says, unless we Christians are ready to start to die by the thousands in dramatic, vigorous new exploits for peace and justice, we should sadly confess that we really never meant what we said. And what he's doing is he's calling Christians who are nonviolent to go out into the world and put yourself in dangerous situations. If soldiers are willing to go out and bear arms and put their lives on the line, how come we Christians who believe that if we are dead, if we die, we go straight to heaven? How come we don't go out in those situations and try to make peace instead of war? Doesn't mean you necessarily go out in the middle of a war and try to do it. But we go into places like Iraq, Afghanistan, China, and Russia. And out of this was birthed a movement, an organization known as Christian Peacemaker Teams. Perhaps you've heard of them. Christian Peacemaker Teams does exactly that, going into some of the world's toughest situations and working for peace. Now, you don't necessarily have to go into the world's toughest situations, but that's something that's been happening throughout history. And yeah, I'll keep you a little long. I apologize. But, you know, recently there was a story, a movie that made one of these situations popular. And it was one of Mel Gibson's movies. It was a very bloody movie. And perhaps you saw it. It was in 2016. He released the movie called Hacksaw Ridge. Now, Hacksaw Ridge is the story about Desmond Doss, who I believe grew up in Lynchburg. Do they maybe have any? Is that right? Yeah, Lynchburg, Virginia. Yeah.
His mother was very, very religious. Mm-hmm. His father had fought in World War One and was rewarded the.
Don't give it all away because I'm going somewhere with this.
That's a wrong start. Yeah. Like one of the highest.
Right, right. I've got it here. So.
His father became a cop.
Yeah. And he was, don't give away the whole story. I'm just. So anyway, Desmond Doss, he's a member of the right. So he's a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's okay. I practice mine. You're going to take away my thunder. All right, so Desmond Doss was a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He read the passage, Thou Shalt Not Kill. That's what did it for him. Ten Commandments, Thou Shalt Not Kill. And he made the decision that he could not take up a weapon in the army. Now, he differed from traditional Mennonite teaching. He decided that he could enlist in the army as long as he didn't have to actually fight. Mennonites have historically said we're not going to even participate in the army. So he was allowed to enlist as a medical professional, as a medic. And the story shows, I'm sure they do some fancy things with the film that maybe aren't true to the story, but I can imagine this one really did happen. They show him being hazed as he's going through boot camp. They show him being abused. He was arrested because he refused to take up arms. He was court-martialed. He was, again, abused further. And finally, he was allowed to participate in the army as this medic. He went to the Battle of Okinawa to serve in this medic role. And the movie just shows time after time the way he goes out and he saves people. He brings them back to this Hacksaw Ridge, lets these people that are injured down so that they can receive medical attention. I believe in the movie he's helping down not only people from his side, but he's helping down people from the other side. And time again, they show that he finds people that were abusing him and tormenting him and hazing him, and he grabs those people and takes them and brings them to safety. And again, this is a real story. Desmond Doss was awarded the Presidential Medal of Honor and given credit for saving 75 people. A nonviolent person. He didn't do nothing. He was actively engaged following his conscience to be a healer, not a killer. But again, we don't have to go to Okinawa. I'm going to keep it closer. We're going to try to go closer to home. How many people here like the outdoors? You can raise your hand. You like the outdoors? Yesterday was a beautiful day. Anybody make it up to Skyline Drive, Blue Ridge Parkway, Sharando Lake? None of those? Okay. But you know these locations? They're right around us. Well, if you have ever been on Skyline Drive, if you've ever been to Sharando, if you've ever been on the Blue Ridge Parkway, you can thank a nonviolent person, a conscientious objector. During World War II, a civilian public service camp was opened in Lyndhurst, Virginia. And these were people that are part of historical peace churches. This one was operated by the Church of the Brethren. People that were conscientious objectors were given permission to go and serve their country, but in a different way. These people lived in barrack-style houses, and they performed various activities along the Blue Ridge and Sharando. Here's a guy overlooking what? Sharando Lake. These people, there were about 60 people in the camp. And here's just a little write-up of what you can find. The men graded and seeded road banks to prevent erosion and deterioration. They cleared brush and constructed rail and stone fences. There was a documentary made on this camp at Lyndhurst a couple years ago. I don't have the name of that in front of me now. But just a wonderful opportunity. They're not doing nothing, but they're doing something to try to help the community. And many people during World War II and on into Vietnam War were awarded conscientious objector status. They were given their 1W status during Vietnam War, and they went into various parts and helped people. Many people went into medical professions, or they went into medical situations where they helped mentally ill people. Some people worked in forestry and agriculture. Some people did a lot of things that we probably wouldn't volunteer to do normally. And actually, when I first started here at this church, I told an old pastor in Ohio, where I come from, I told him I'm going to be pastor at Stanton Mennonite Church. He said, oh, Stanton, of course. That's where the Stanton Lunatic Asylum is. And I'm like, well, yeah, we don't call it that anymore. But yes, why did this guy 450 miles away know the Western state? Because people were granted 1W status and able to come serve at Western State in the mental health ward as an alternative to going to war. And do you know who paid for all of these things? The CPS, the 1W. Do you know who shelled out the money? Because it's not just free. The church. They weren't mooching on society. They weren't mooching on the taxpayers. The church said, I would rather pay for you to go serve in a mental health facility than to see you go off to war. I think it's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. And maybe I'll even say that there's several people in this church here who were granted 1W service or 1W exemption during the Vietnam War. Danny's one of them. Danny Weaver, he's not here today. Danny served in New York in a hospital. And he can tell you about some of the torture, not torture, but the torment, the hazing that he received during those times as well. Sometimes we nonviolent people are accused of mooching, shirking our responsibilities, living off the system, being lazy. And you know what? If we just simply say, I'm not going to do anything, that argument's absolutely right. I think that we would do better as a church if we refuse to pick up arms. What we should be doing instead is picking up shovels. We should be picking up bedpans. Because absolutely it is our duty to to care for the people around us, to make this world a better place. And if you think you need to serve your country, I hope you can find nonviolent ways to do so. I believe that nonviolence is the way of Jesus. The Mennonite Church has historically taught we are called to be nonviolent people. And I simply want to close with this quote by Walter Wink. A reminder that we're not simply to fall into these binaries of kill or not kill. There's so many options in between where we can manifest the love of Jesus Christ. Wink, a theologian, says this. He's saying again, Jesus is not telling us to submit to evil, but to refuse to oppose it on its own terms. We are not to let the opponent dictate the methods of our opposition. Jesus is urging us to transcend both passivity and violence by finding a third way, one that is at once assertive and yet nonviolent. Let's pray. God, we know that these challenges are before us, and we know that we don't have all the answers. We know that there are two different ways to see these things, but we know, Lord, that you are calling us to see them in a certain way. We pray for patience when we don't agree with other Christians. We pray for understanding in moments of confusion. But above all, Lord, we just pray that we be faithful to you. Lord, may we be faithful to you at all costs. In Christ's name, amen.